MacGuffin Men with discussions about Chevy Chase, Kristen Wiig, Jason Sudeikis, Adam Sandler, Alec Baldwin, featuring mentions of Maya Rudolph, Sandra Bullock, Chris Parnell, Dan Aykroyd, with musical guest Puddle of Mudd, and now your hosts, Alex and James.
All right, welcome to the MacGuffin Men. Here is part two of our discussion of Saturday Night Live. Enjoy.
So that brings us to 2000. I guess after that we have 9/11, which, I mean, being a show that not only shoots in New York, but really embraces New York, and I mean, their sets are made to look like they're outside of New York, and the intros show off a lot of New York, and live from New York at Saturday Night. It had an impact, eh?
Yes, yeah, and there was sort of a question as to whether or not they should do the show. Marcy Klein, who's Calvin Klein's daughter and is a big part of running the show now, sort of lived very close to the towers. And she called Lauren after it happened and was like, we're pushing this date back, right? Because their premiere was 18 days after 9/11. And Lauren Michaels said, we're not going to cancel yet. It's too early. And then sort of he ended up talking to Rudy Giuliani, who had hosted the show in 97. And just sort of asked him, like, can we do this and stuff like that? And Giuliani was very, very supportive, like, yes, you should do this. People need to learn how to laugh and cry on the same day again, because it's going to be happening a lot for a long time. So the beginning of the show was Paul Simon playing the boxer with New York firemen and policemen sort of standing in silence behind him and around him on the set. And then Giuliani and Lorne Michaels come out, and Lorne Michaels essentially asks Giuliani, is it okay to be funny? And Rudy Giuliani says, why start now? And then says, live from New York at Saturday Night, which is a funny joke. And
such a funny joke.
Yeah. And apparently it was like a sort of in the studio, it was a really interesting moment, because it was sort of like, Giuliani said it was sort of, he hadn't laughed in, you know, so long, and, him and a couple of the fire or police chief, sort of were going to go because he'd been going on so little sleep. And just when they went to get their stuff from Lauren's office, they were just sort of ended up just staying and watching the whole show. Cause he's like, and every sketch seemed like the funniest sketch the show's ever written, because it was sort of, you know, they just hadn't laughed in so long. So it was just so nice to have a release. And, you know, people have said that I haven't seen that show. I've seen the intro, but, or the cold open. I haven't seen the actual sketches, but people have said it was a very, you know, light show, which is totally understandable. Like a lot of characters and stuff like that. Reese Witherspoon was the host and apparently was a total pro about it. And
the dark force of nature that is Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, to do a SNL for the first time 18 days after 9/11 is impressive.
No, I just mean, like, it's so fitting. Like, it's such a bright, bubbly, like, charismatic kind of person.
Yeah. And, apparently it was, it was good to have that show, so.
Yeah, they said they kind of avoided political humor for a little while after that for obvious reasons. They said TV Funhouse didn't really lay off the political stuff at all.
I do not recall.
Okay. Do you like TV Funhouse?
No. I'm fairly, I'm a hard sell on animated things in general. Like, I've always have been, and I don't know why. I've never been able to really say it. I guess it's sort of the production aspect I'm less interested in, so it sort of takes out an element of interest to me. And, I just never really care for the TV Funhouse.
Okay. So, speaking of it, I mean, TV Funhouse is supposed to still be, you know, political, and then really laying off political sensitivity at the time. I remember a little while ago, where was that article where they were talking about Seth Meyers and Weekend Update being most politically biting thing on TV?
Yeah. This was a couple of years ago. This was when Amy Poehler was still around.
Right.
It was in Entertainment Weekly or something like that.
How biting is Weekend Update, and how biting is SNL in general?
It's about as biting as Seth Meyers' smile, you know? It's just sort of like, I made a snarky joke, you know? Like, I don't know, what is biting, you know? Like, it's like, ooh, he said that, you know? Like,
yeah.
Ooh, he talked about the Kardashian, or Kim Kardashian's ass, that's biting, you know? Like,
yeah, I just mean, is there any, again, this kind of gets back to the question of people romanticizing the past about SNL. Mm-hmm. And I guess a lot of people say now that it's like, it's so tame and it's so sensitive and it's, clearly corporate controlled, and they're just not saying anything to piss anybody off. Is that an actual change, or is that just kind of people wanting the early ones to really be that radical?
I don't know. And it's been a few years since I watched a lot of the early episodes. It's been about 3 years or so. But just watching, I watched a couple of the first season episodes earlier this week, and it's just sort of, I don't know that it's necessarily, it was necessarily more, any more vicious. I think it was just sort of that there were so few avenues for you to get sort of these thoughts out. Whereas now you've got The Daily Show, you've got so much, you know, satire on television, all these, you know, sitcoms, and SNL isn't the only place anymore. Yeah. And that's sort of what has changed. You know, I think it's debatable as to whether or not the humor has really changed on SNL. It's not debatable that you are getting SNL style humor in so many different avenues now. And I think that's the big change.
Yeah. And I mean, from their perspective, it doesn't seem smart to play it pretty tame, because all the really good political stuff is going to be on The Daily Show in real time anyway, where they can get away with a lot more stuff, mm-hmm. both, you know, with the language and just the ideas.
Well, and it also has to fit the type of person that's on the show, like the whoever's doing Update. And Seth Meyers doesn't strike me as a fearless person. I feel like he wants his career to go well, and he wants everybody to like him. And I think there's always sort of that that mentality on SNL now. I don't feel like Norm wanted everybody to like him, and Chevy yeah. Chase certainly didn't care. Yeah. But and I mean, this extends throughout the whole cast. Like you can sort of tell. Like, and I mean, sketch comedians are not the best actors in general, but you can generally tell after watching, you know, a few episodes, how this person is in real life. You know, like if this person's a dick, or if, and everybody on SNL now just seems like a nice person. I think Lorne Michaels tries to cast for nice people now. And yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And nobody really wants to offend anybody. And Jimmy Fallon has said, like, on Update, he was like, I never really want to offend anybody and all that stuff. Yeah. And I'm sure Tina Fey's the same way, you know, like she seems like a nice person. So, you know.
Yeah, she seems more political than Jimmy Fallon does,
though. Well,
which leads to pissing people off.
One of my sneakers seems more political than Jimmy Fallon does. You know?
Oh, I know the sneaker you mean.
Yeah.
Can't believe you wear that around.
Oh my God, that guy was so pro-Nader in 2000. It was insane.
2004, I mean, now that we've hit the 25th anniversary, I think people kind of have an idea of where things went and kind of how the show was working at that time. But 2004, we run into the Ashley Simpson incident.
Yeah.
Her famous lip-syncing one.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to give us a brief rundown of that? Because I'm pretty sure everyone remembers it anyway.
It was awesome, man. she just comes out and...
for her second tune.
Her second song. And somebody plays the song that she had already performed. It sort of starts...
her vocals.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, it's just sort of a big screw-up. And then she does a little jig and walks off and... God, it's weird and amazing.
The jig is so good.
Yeah, the jig's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel so bad for her, but...
Yeah, yeah. It just was clear that she was lip-syncing. The entire world ripped on her for a while.
Yeah.
And then the next week, SNL rips on her for a while. I was surprised by how harsh they were on her when I watched those ones after.
Well, they have to deflect from themselves.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But, I mean, this is one of the three events that's listed on, like, the main Wikipedia page. And I know Wikipedia isn't the best source for academic information, but it does give you a grip of what the average person finds important and interesting.
It gives... Yeah, I think it's... I do always sort of think that Wikipedia is more of, like, a 35 and under perspective, though. For sure. Something that's been around as long as SNL, I don't think that we're necessarily getting an accurate... presentation on Wikipedia, you know?
Okay. Well, anyway...
And it's also Wikipedia, you know?
Yeah. The three controversies that they list are this one, the Rage Against the Machine in 96, and 1990, the Sinead O'Connor one, which we kind of just brushed past. Do you want to give us a rundown of that one, too?
Is this the Pope?
Yeah.
One? Yeah. Sinead O'Connor was scheduled as the musical guest, and she wanted to do this a cappella cover of Bob Marley's song, War. And... on Thursday, her manager or something ends up asking one of the producers on SNL, like, can we just sort of do this one with one camera? We want an acapella. We want it to be this really, this really powerful song, and she's going to hold up a picture of this child at the end, sort of like, so it's a statement on child poverty. And the producer's like, yeah, that's great. And then the producer, or sorry, Sinead O'Connor's manager asked this producer again. So it's like, so is there any sort of like delay, or what do you guys do, you know, and just sort of like this question that really in retrospect totally should have tipped him off. And he was just like, oh, no, it's live. It's live. You know, there's no delay. Yeah, and then so in Dress, Sinead O'Connor does the song, like it was explained to this producer, like she holds a picture of, you know, some children at the end. It's like, this is what we need to stop and stuff like that. And it's just with the one camera, and, you know, it's apparently very emotional in the studio. And then for the live show, at the end of the song, she holds up a picture of the Pope and rips it apart and then says, fight the real enemy. And then the show just sort of goes to commercial in silence. Like the director, Dave Wilson, was pretty adamant about not lighting the applause sign. Yeah, and then she was on for the goodbyes. Apparently, Lorne Michaels really hates any sort of censorship, and people sort of speculate that he thought that was a really, like, didn't necessarily stand by the statement, but you know, that she was ballsy enough to do it is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's
yeah.
that.
Yeah, she did come out at the end. Tim Robbins, a Catholic, did not thank her.
Yeah.
Is how that goes.
Okay. Tim Robbins is wearing a GE shirt with like the crossed out. You know, like the circle and the cross out over GE.
Oh, really?
GE's logo, yeah. That was like his thing for the week. Like that was what he was going to do. That was his statement. And
got slightly overshadowed.
Yeah, he got one up.
That's awesome. Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of similar as before I said. But I mean, this pretty powerful thing. I mean, it's a statement against the church, obviously. This Rage Against the Machine thing in 96. And then the biggest story of like the 2000s is Ashley Simpson. Do you see that as the show getting less and less political, their musicians not wanting to take a bigger stand, or is something going to happen, you know, this season where some rock group or rap group or something comes out and does another, you know, political thing that needs to be censored? Or do you think this is a progression that actually reflects something about music or the show?
I don't think it really reflects anything other than people just sort of wanting to be perceived as not terrible people. And it seems to have been something that has grown over time. Nobody really seems to want to be seen as, you know, like an asshole or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Before I really watched a lot of SNL, I kind of got most of my SNL input through the Celebrity Jeopardy, like MP3 tracks that you heard onto a CD and put on whatever MP3 player you had before iPods. That was kind of something that actually crossed into the mainstream, and people who didn't always watch SNL were interested in this and found it funny.
Yeah, because it's funny.
Yeah, it was very funny.
And it's, you know,
good Sean Connery, which people always love. Lately, though, I mean, since the Celebrity Jeopardies, what's actually crossed into the mainstream and what's got people who aren't watching SNL to be like, oh, yeah, SNL is a thing that might be funny sometimes?
Tina Fey, Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
Number one for sure.
Absolutely.
I don't know. There's an argument for Will Ferrell's George Bush, I think.
Okay. Yeah, he did have that Broadway show, too.
Yeah. No, that was a well-liked impression.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's all I can think of, really.
Do you think that SNL just is because there's so much competition that it just takes up a smaller part in like the cultural landscape, and therefore it doesn't transcend all these things as easily? Or do you think, what do you think the cause of that is?
Well, I mean, how many of these big moments do we have in the 90s?
Yeah.
And I don't know that there were necessarily all that many like these big transcendent sort of things on SNL. SNL in the 70s was sort of a transcendent thing, so you got to sort of take that out of the discussion. But I mean, what from the 80s really caught on, and the things from the 90s that caught on were just sort of movies. They didn't necessarily become part of the pop culture landscape until they were a film, you know, and you were seeing them, you know, incessantly promoted. So I would say that I don't necessarily think that that's any more or less than usual. And I mean, you have to remember, Tina Fey's Palin was huge. Like,
yeah, it was like, that was like a news story.
Yeah, exactly.
And, well, story.
And that's the thing is that people like SNL will always have, or still has, the biggest platform for these things to happen. And just because they have so many, it's got that level of respect and stuff like that. And people will, like, you know, entertainment outlets will always, or, you know, still always watch SNL every week. There's going to be a write-up on SNL, whereas, you know, like, nobody's watching The Daily Show every day and writing about it, you know?
Right.
And it's just got the biggest platform to do something like this. And so when these things do happen that it feels like could catch on, or, I mean, and a lot of the Lonely Island sketches, or sorry, the digital shorts have really caught on. And
yeah, that's the one I was going to say, that is still relevant, or makes SNL still relevant.
Yeah. And we're in a period of time where we're, it's like, I suppose, DVR culture, where nobody really has to watch the show anymore, and they can find the stuff that's really good on Monday, or when they talk to people that did watch the show, or sort of pops up on a blog. Like, this is what's interesting. And yeah, I don't know. It's more or less. I think it's probably the same.
Okay.
All things considered.
You want to talk about digital shorts for a bit?
Sure. They are sporadically very funny. I haven't seen a really good one in a long time, but, you know, Lazy Sunday was sort of the one that was the first one that really sort of came into general culture's consciousness.
Yeah.
And it's super funny. It's still funny. And, you know, and then there was, like, I'm on a Boat was kind of big. Dick in a Box.
You sound so sad saying Dick in a Box.
I was never huge on it. I would have liked to see, like, more focus on, like, the actual, like, early 90s R&B parody than the actual Dick in a Box. I thought that was where the joke was.
That's funny, yeah.
Like, get some, like, the John B. beards were killing me. I loved it.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah. And what other really good ones are there?
The digital shorts. Mm. I think those are the main ones for sure.
Okay.
I think it's just kind of a generational thing. Like, it's a viral video essentially that just happens to be on a very popular network.
Yep.
Well, not a very popular network, but a network.
But a network that a network that exists.
But totally a network. How much of the stuff? Actually, no. Just one more thing about digital shorts. When Dick Ebersol took over, he really wanted to go after teenagers and the youth crowd again. And I mean, this is back
decades. Get those MTV kids in here.
This is decades ago, and we're already seeing some of the transitions he did was he wanted shorter sketches. He wanted nothing more than 5 minutes. And I mean, people always talk about how short everyone's attention span is now, but this is something that's been building for, you know, 30 years. Do you see anything else that the shows are doing now that are, you know, clearly we find the youth viewership more important?
It's a better looking cast now than it has been.
Okay. Do you think that's part of that trend?
I do think there's certainly, starting in around 2000, I don't know that it's necessarily like top of the list, but I feel like if Jimmy Fallon and another comparable comedian who isn't as good looking as Jimmy Fallon are sort of up for the same spot, I think Jimmy Fallon gets it because, you know, he's a decent looking guy. And yeah, I do think that's very much a part of it. And you look at the casts in 2000, post 2000, like they're generally good looking people, you know? And
even their fat dude isn't that fat, like Bobby Moynihan.
Yeah, well, I guess so. Kenan Thompson can only be the black guy, can't be the fat guy too.
He can't be both.
And he has lost weight since he started on the show. It seems like he started on the show in like 1992. It's been there forever.
Kenan Thompson?
Yeah, yeah.
Just seems like that.
Yeah, no, I know.
time drags.
But yeah, no, just post 2000, everybody's just been pretty good looking.
Do you want to talk about Casey Wilson at all?
Sure. I liked Casey Wilson.
Do you put any stock in the rumor that she was fired for not losing 30 pounds?
No, because she's a good looking bigger girl. You know, like she's, as far as bigger girls go, she's pretty sexy, you know?
Yeah, but that means to the average person, she'd probably be sexy if she dropped 30 pounds.
30 pounds? If Casey Wilson lost 30 pounds, she'd be as skinny as Kristen Wiig. Like, that's absurd.
I don't think that's true. No. But anyway, so you don't think that's true?
No. And if that was the case, I'm happy she didn't lose the weight because that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do not for a second think that that's true.
Okay. Favorite update host?
It's got to be Chevy Chase.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any just favorite hosts in general?
I don't know. It's tricky. Like, I really like the one Emma Stone did last year. I thought she was really good. But I mean, you're typically going to like hosts that you already kind of like. And that's sort of part of the reason that SNL is so much fun to watch. It's sort of watching these people that you don't see do these things in other places. You know, this is sort of the place for them to do it.
Oh, especially athletes and politicians and stuff.
LeBron was a surprisingly good host. I think he surprised everybody with how good he was. Favorite hosts? I don't know.
You can just say Betty White.
No. That was a hosting by committee show anyways.
Do you want to talk about the Betty White thing? Do you think there's a story there at all? The whole grassroots social media getting her on?
No, because I think the social media thing started it, but she's still very well respected by comedians and stuff like that. And putting her on in the Mother's Day show and bringing back all the ladies from the 2000s, like Anna Gasteyer, Tina Fey, Maya the best ever, Rudolph. okay. And just being able to bring all those people back and Amy Poehler. I mean, it was a good idea for the show, 100%. Like, and comedians love Betty White, so.
Okay. Underrated cast members for you? Overrated? Underrated?
I think Jason Sudeikis was underrated for a long time. Now he's appropriately rated.
Okay.
Just in that he was never on the show. And I was always like, this guy's clearly charismatic enough to be the lead in movies, and he's the lead in mostly bad movies, but he's got a career playing the best friend, at least in movies, I think.
I hope so.
Because he's a decent looking guy and he's funny. Underrated cast members. Maya Rudolph, man.
Yeah.
She's so funny.
She's very funny.
Everything she does is amazing. Like, she's just, I don't think she sweats. She just drips talent when she's, when it's like hot in the studio or something,
okay.
You know? Yeah, she's absolutely underrated and underrated as an actress, like in general. You know, what about you?
What's the question?
The same questions you asked me.
I just asked you.
Underrated cast members.
Underrated cast members. I always liked Chris Parnell. Like,
yeah,
they gave him a lot of stuff to do, but I think I liked him even more than that.
Okay.
Overrated, Kenan Thompson.
I think Kenan Thompson is accurately rated because nobody likes him. He's just there.
Okay, the fact that he's there means he's overrated to me.
Can I throw out an overrated cast member?
Sure.
Because I didn't get a chance to answer this question. I'm very offended. As an SNL cast member, Kristen Wiig.
Really?
Yes. She drives me insane now.
What?
It's just been this slow downhill slope of just her only being characters, and her characters are getting so annoying. Like,
yeah.
She's an extremely talented comedic actress.
Yes.
She needs to be able to do more things than fucking Gilly every two episodes.
She hasn't done Gilly in, like, how long?
Okay, well, something else came out, you know? Like, dude, her characters get so annoying. Like, that. And they're always, I mean, it's the character sketch. The beats get the same. And she's a very talented woman. And, you know, she's great when she's not doing characters that are abrasive and annoying. And yes, I did like these characters initially, but oh my God, they just wear me down.
So you don't agree with Lorne Michaels' statement that she's one of the top three or four SNL performers of all time?
I do agree with that statement. I think it's unfortunate that they're wasting her by having her do the same five things.
Yeah, that's why I don't think she's overrated. I think she's just misused.
Okay, fair enough. Well, most of it misused.
Okay,
yeah.
We can agree on that then.
Although, if she was being used to do different things, she'd probably just end up being Maya Rudolph, you know?
And that, okay.
I would think about her the same way, you know?
Maya Rudolph's such a good singer.
Maya Rudolph, yeah. Her mom is Minnie Riperton, man.
Okay.
That didn't surprise anybody.
In 2006, Lorne Michaels was facing some budget cuts. And,
I want a question, because we were on the host thing.
Sure.
Do you have a favorite host, other than John Hamm, because everybody knows how much you love John Hamm?
I mean, Alec Baldwin's good, but everyone knows.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, any of those 10-plus guys
probably
are generally accepted as
probably
good.
Probably decent. I wasn't ready for this question. You so rarely ask me questions.
Well,
I'll think about it.
You know, I'm interested. Okay, well, do you have somebody that hasn't hosted that you feel like should host, or you don't know why they haven't hosted, or you would just like to see them host?
Lutz. No.
And you can pick somebody that's totally unlikely to ever host. Like, pick David Cross, you know? Like,
okay, David Cross.
Mm. Well, yeah, obviously I'd like to see that as well. But
Nick Swartz never hosted, right?
I'm certain he hasn't. I can't imagine why he would.
He's funny.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's definitely funny.
He'd be good. I'll think about that one, too.
Okay. Well, mine,
yeah,
because this is something I was thinking about, is Sandra Bullock.
Yeah. She's never done it, though.
Right before we started this is when I was thinking about it, and I did a quick scan of I went on the list of SNL episodes Wikipedia page and did a find for Sandra. Nobody named Sandra has ever hosted the show, so according to the Wikipedia page. So, and I don't know why she hasn't. She's a very, charismatic person who's funny.
And the world was in love with her last year.
Who dislikes Sandra Bullock?
Yeah, that's true.
And she's a good physical comedian as well.
And she's been around for a while.
Exactly. So she's somebody that I don't know why she hasn't hosted. Maybe she stepped on Lorne Michaels' toe at the opera one time or something. But
get her in there for sure.
Yeah. I would pay to watch that one.
Okay. 2006, Lorne Michaels facing budget cuts, has to choose to cut his staff or cut the number of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
He chose to cut his staff. He had the smallest cast since 98. Did he make the right choice? And here is what I'm thinking is another half option. You can have a smaller staff, fewer episodes, or shorter episodes.
Yeah, he would never cut the length of the show.
Okay. Smaller cast, smaller episodes. What do you do?
I don't know. I guess it depends how you feel about the talent, and also, I don't know, that's an interesting choice. I guess he didn't feel too strongly about the people he had to cut. But also, he's very interested in the legacy of the show. So, I mean, I feel like doing 18 episodes consistently isn't something he'd be into. Okay. You know, like sort of, you know, taking back the number of episodes a year. You know?
Right. There was a season with 19. But anyway.
Well, yeah. It was a writer strike season. And there was a season with 12, you know.
There was a non-writer strike reason.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If you're speaking of...
So what season is that?
I don't know.
Okay. Can you give me an era?
It's true. 1900s.
Okay.
Paleolithic.
Okay.
Speaking of how much, you know, Lorne Michaels actually likes what he's putting on, how much of the stuff that he's airing does he find funny, do you think? Or does he just think, okay, they're going to find this funny? Or he takes, you know, if his whole writing crew says, no, this is really funny, he just kind of lets it go?
It's a lot of people theorize that he doesn't really care for political humor all that much. And so I don't think he really finds the cold opens funny, but I mean, who does? those are typically written by, I don't know if it's still that way, but certainly was until like 2002, 2003. This writer, Jim Downey, wrote Update with Norm Macdonald, and sort of kind of known for his political sketch writing. He's one of those guys that's like, oh, Jim Downey's got a sketch coming in. You might not see the pages until Friday, you know, but you're blocking 6 minutes for it for the cold open, you know? So yeah, there's some, and I mean, he was there in the '70s, you know, he's got his place. And yeah, he wrote Update with, Seth and Amy as well. So
okay.
He was definitely around for a while. And I would imagine he still wrote those cold opens, but, there are some writers that Lorne Michaels just trusts, and I'm sure Robert Smigel, who does TV Funhouse, is like, I've got a cartoon coming in. Lorne Michaels sort of let him do his own thing.
Yeah.
Probably most well seen in the 25th anniversary special, where the TV Funhouse was just entirely taking shots at Lorne. there are people that he trusts and that he'll let do things, but I do think he does find things funny. I think he's maybe concedes a little bit more to performance, in that the show is definitely more of a performance show than a writer's show anymore, with characters and stuff like that. And you rarely get these big, like, or sort of recurring things. You rarely get these big, like, writerly pieces. Like, I was watching one of the episodes from the first season recently, and I forget one of the sketches, but there were these two, like, really cleverly written sketches that didn't really have any good performances, but were just funny. One of them, I don't recall, and the other one was Citizen Kane 2. And it's just sort of the premise is that this nurse who heard him say Rosebud, but I mean, in the movie, nobody hears him say Rosebud, but there's sort of like this nurse hears him say Rosebud. But then she remembers that he also said something else afterwards. And it's this really clever, funny sketch, and there's nothing really remarkable about it performance-wise, but it's before the midway part of the show, so they would never put it in the first half now, but and I feel like, you know, he likes watching performers perform. I do think he still finds the show funny. Like, Will Ferrell has said that he likes to sort of, when he's not, or when he was on the show and he wasn't, you know, in a sketch, you know, those two sketches a show where he wasn't there.
Yeah.
He would sort of like to sneak around under the bleachers and watch Lauren, sort of just watching the show. And, he liked to see Lauren sort of just watching the show and, snickering himself. Like, you know, Lauren absolutely gets a kick out of the show.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I heard, Bill Simmons interviewing Seth Meyers, and he had some suggestions on how to change the show. Mm-hmm. He said,
Bill Simmons, the sports writer who is the editor of Grantland.com, for those that don't know.
Bill Simmons suggested cutting the second musical act, save some time, cut down the intro. We don't have to go over everyone's name with a, you know, 10 seconds of music and pictures of New York in between, and spend more time showing the hugs and the goodbyes at the end. Do you think that's a good idea? Do you like any of those ideas? Would you make any changes to the show?
Well, I love the musical aspect of the show. It's just so rarely that they have acts that I'm interested in. And, I mean, it's very much, music more than anything on the show, I think, is very ratings driven. You'll see a clearly, you know, producer or comedian's choice, as the host more often than you'll see like a musician's choice, like, you know, the crew's choice as far as music, you know, it's so much more rare. And I think that's sort of one of the concessions that has been made in that sort of, you know, and Lorne Michaels isn't as up on music now as he would be in the '70s. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't really care that if the second musical performance went away, I would only care on select episodes where it's, you know, a band I'm interested in.
Right.
Shortening the intro, it's only a 2-minute intro, you know, like what can you really gain? I think generally shortening the cold open would be good. That was one thing that I noticed in the older episodes I was watching again this week. Cold open was normally like 2 minutes tops.
Yeah.
Whereas now you get these really overlong political sketches that just aren't funny for the most part. Yeah, shorten those. And the goodbyes, there's almost never anything interesting about the goodbyes.
Yeah.
I don't care about watching Ryan Reynolds hug Kristen Wiig.
Okay. SNL, like most sketch comedy, pretty hit or miss. When they're writing the shows, do you think that they know certain sketches aren't that funny or aren't funny at all? And they're just saying, hey, we got 90 minutes to fill. Or do you think that they're putting up, you know, what they all think is very solid stuff and some stuff just doesn't work because it wasn't performed properly or the jokes just don't land for one reason or another?
I think very rarely are they putting on a sketch that every writer and performer likes, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's just borderline impossible. But,
like, do you think that they get some really fail that they are really surprised by? Or do you think the ones that aren't great, they're like, yeah, we knew this wasn't our strong stuff anyway. That's why we put it in the last 10 minutes.
I don't know that they put the less strong stuff in the last 10 minutes. They put the less, or the more inventive stuff in the last 10 minutes. And
okay.
Like where they sort of throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. Very often that's the most interesting sketch in the show, even when it dies. And yeah, I think they're like, it depends on the host, I think is the most part where they think, I think they're pretty confident in the show if they have a host that they're confident in. And like, they might not think every sketch is necessarily hilarious, but for the most part, most of the cast and crew and writers sort of feel like they're putting on a good show. And then there will be some shows like the Steven Seagal week. Everybody kind of knew that was going to be a bad week. And
was it really that bad?
Yeah. He was pitching sketch ideas and they were awful and hilarious. And got me to tell a Seagal story. It's going to happen. he was on the Monday sort of pitch meeting. He would be like, hey, we should write a sketch where I'm the psychiatrist and this girl comes in and she's been raped. And the psychiatrist is just like, well, it's your own fault. And the psychiatrist just proceeds to yell at them. And Seagal's then like, because that's how psychiatrists fucking are, right? just this whole, like, really ridiculous, like, barely criticism of anything, you know, like, how his movies always had thinly veiled but terribly obvious, you know, like, government critique that was just so bad. It was like what a 10-year-old thought of the government. And then at the end of the sketch, the psychiatrist had sex with the patient. And,
the rape victim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that sketch didn't make it.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, yeah, there are weeks like that where, and I mean, Lorne Michaels has said this is going to be a bad week. To like, people have mentioned this. And, yeah, so, like, nobody expected Robert Blake to be a good week.
Yeah. So. Okay. Or Wayne Gretzky.
But people liked Wayne Gretzky, though. It's,
yeah, that's true.
It can be a good week and a bad show.
Okay, right. Why does this variety show last for 35 years when other variety shows rarely last, especially lately?
Because the people that care about SNL, and this goes for us as well, are people that care about comedy or people that care about show business or television as a medium. You care about comedy. I care less about comedy, but probably care more about television as a medium and the idea of there being sort of this last sort of, you know, live show like the way television used to be. I'm fairly rarely nostalgic, but it is totally a nostalgia thing for how I'm interested in SNL because I like those, you know, a couple second shots where they'll come back from commercial and we can see sort of Lauren pointing to things in a set as they're, you know, building the set and break and stuff like that. And it's just like that whole sort of live aspect is really cool and almost non-existent and will be non-existent when the show goes away. And it had sort of like this 10-year, you know, grace period from being so well-liked for 5 years, you know, and that's how it survived until like 87 when Lorne Michaels sort of started making it not suck again. And well, I mean, other than, you know, the Eddie Murphy stuff and people generally like the Billy Crystal year as well. Yeah, and the right type of people care about it. People in the media care about it, and performers care about it, and people with a lot of clout in the places that are important for there to be clout, you know, care about this show. So, yeah, that's why it's lasted.
Okay.
And it is still, like, you do still get these big cultural things that happen on the show. Like we talked about the Palin impression. And, yeah, it has value, you know?
Okay. But the thing you were talking about those, when you come back from commercial and you'll see, you know, stage directions or some lighting directions, or you see Lorne Michaels talking to a cameraman, those are relatively new, right?
Yeah. No, doing that is relative, like showing that on the show is relative.
Yeah, exactly. And do you think that's kind of just part of kind of just culture now, where we're more used to seeing every side of production and reading about exactly how a movie or a show was put together, and, you know, TMZ is seeing, like, you know, the stars from every angle, that kind of thing? Or why do you think now we're kind of getting more of a behind the scenes look at it?
I don't know. I've never really put much thought into it. I think it's just sort of a reminder. Yeah, we're live. Yeah, this is the thing.
Yeah.
That is live. This is happening right now, you know?
And that is something that they have going for them, where so few shows do.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And it's also sort of that, I also think it's sort of a, cause they do it sort of in the middle of a commercial, you know, like it'll be a commercial, you get this 5 second sting of SNL behind the scenes and then go to another commercial. It's sort of like, yeah, we're coming back. We're on our way. Finish making that sandwich. You know?
Okay. Yeah. Why is it, I mean, we've talked about people romanticizing, you know, the beginning of SNL, but that kind of goes beyond just the 75 to 80. It's kind of everybody you talk to now, it seems, liked SNL at a time that wasn't right now.
Yeah.
Like, it's always cool to like the SNL 5 years ago, pretty much. You know, people say, oh, well, it started to suck when Will Ferrell left, and people will also say, oh, it sucked when Will Ferrell got there, because that's when these people left and when his brand of comedy came out. Is that just kind of something that applies to everything, where what you're watching growing up is what you're going to like?
Yes. And it's not necessarily what you like growing up. It's sort of in everything, whereas everything, like this happens with movies all the time. I get in this argument. People are like, movies used to be so good, or so much better, you know, like 5 years ago, movies were better than they are now. And I don't buy that at all. It's just sort of, people forget the things they don't like. People remember the things they do like, you know, like people, were like, 1972 is such a good year for movies. And I'm like, yeah, you know, kind of was, there were some good movies that came out. You know what? I don't remember the shitty movies that came out.
Yeah.
That certainly existed, you know, like we remember, yeah, something borrowed now. We're not going to remember it in a year, you know? You know, these things are just sort of movies that fade away, and, the bad sketches fade away. Like Will Ferrell wasn't always in good sketches. You,
yeah,
know?
Well, you'll remember him as Trebek, but you won't remember him as the Spartan Spirit cheerleader guy.
Yeah.
No one really likes those bits that much.
Yeah. Well, somebody has to, they did like 20 of them.
I never got those, but anyway.
Yeah. And it's just, it's with anything in pop culture. People think music's bad now, even though it's probably pretty good right now. It's just sort of the way we've started to consume it is different. And, you know, you just got to remember that you have forgotten things.
Good way to put it. You ready for activities?
Yeah.
Can you say activities like Don Pardo, the longtime SNL announcer?
Activities!
That's pretty good. All right. SNL has the most Emmy nominations of any show ever.
Okay.
How many nominations have they received? I'll give you a check mark if you can get within 5.
See, it's tricky. Like, how many? Because I just don't know how many categories I can really. I assume it's been nominated for best comedy or variety show, like, almost every year it's been on the air.
You would hope so, right? Yeah. Especially the last little bit. But.
But I just don't. I can't think of any other awards it could be nominated for.
Oh,
like, writing of a.
Actors and actresses.
Have people performance been,
oh, yeah,
been nominated?
Oh, yeah.
All right. 102.
126. So you're wrong.
Can we just list all of them?
Do them all as Don Pardo.
1975!
In 1998, they went digital filming the show. Between 5 cameras and all the audio, how much information do they record for a single SNL program?
How are we measuring this in, like, gigabytes and stuff like that?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd want it in kilobytes.
Yeah. 250 terabytes.
1.5 terabytes.
It's not that much.
No, it really isn't.
The way you phrased it, I just assumed it was some absurd number. So I picked some absurd number.
Okay, well, that didn't work for you.
No. I'm sorry, was I going to win something if I got it right?
Check marks.
I'm not Miranda Cosgrove in School of Rock. I don't care.
Nice. On February 10th of 2001, an episode hosted by J-Lo was delayed by 45 minutes. Why? And I'll give you a hint. It's not an NFL game.
What was the date again?
February 10th, 2001.
The Grammys? Years ago. I don't know. Just tell me. I'm bored.
XFL game.
Nice. Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. We talked a bit about SNL movies and how you love them.
Are we talking more about SNL movies?
How many of them are there? You have 10 seconds.
28.
11.
I was just thinking, like, movies that I just can't believe existed. Like, it's Pat and the Stuart Smalley movie, you know?
Stuart Saves His Family.
So I didn't, okay.
Show respect.
Oh, shit.
First cast member born in the 1980s. They also played in the XFL. No, that's not true.
Abby Elliott?
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Casey Wilson.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Dubs. How many SNL cast members were not born in the United States in the history of the show? And one of them is He Hate Me from the XFL.
Just, okay. That's it. No more XFL references.
Sold. I haven't had a chance to make one in several years.
Just get it all out of your system. 22.
5. Well,
I don't know the nationalities of a lot of people. I would just assume they're American, but who knows how many Canadians there were.
Fair. Biggest gap in hosting by a single person.
I've read this too. I don't know.
Jeff Bridges, 27 years.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Good career.
He's had a long career.
Yeah, he and Beau Bridges hosted, and then he got to go solo just very recently. Biggest gap in musical performance.
Aerosmith.
No. Okay. Better than Aerosmith. Elton John.
Okay.
29 years. Pretty sweet. And the last one, there have been two cast members from SNL who have been fired and rehired. Who are they?
Parnell.
Yes, good work. And the other one is totally someone you know and isn't just someone who was on for like 3 episodes.
Mm.
And we've mentioned his name in this
podcast. Thanks for narrowing it down by saying his.
Not Kristen Wiig.
Yeah. I don't know.
Belushi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Jim or John?
John.
Oh, okay.
Who would fire Jim? That's a comedy god.
It's got a new show coming out this season. You excited?
No, of course not.
It's going to be huge.
You got anything else to say about SNL?
Well, yeah. Where does SNL go? How long does SNL last?
SNL.
What happens when Lorne Michaels quits? Will Lorne Michaels quit before he dies?
Because, I mean, I'd like to say, like, my guess would be that it's already been canceled, but I know that's not true. Let's say, man, it's already been on for so long, too.
Yep. Lorne Michaels is 66 now. How many more years do you think he does the show?
He does it for 6 more, and then they do 7 without him.
Okay. Because my theory on the show is, personally, I don't think Lorne Michaels quits the show until it's, like, taken away from him, until it's like, this is bad for your health, you need to stop. And I think he sort of has some sort of input until he dies.
Yeah, I think his role will diminish.
Yes.
Harsh for a while.
Yeah, yeah. I think he will absolutely be given a chance to pick a successor, and I think that successor is going to be Tina Fey, because I don't think Tina Fey has any sort of aspirations to be a performance superstar. I also don't think she will be able to be a performance superstar in her 50s or anything.
Yeah.
She cares about SNL more than most people. 30 Rock isn't going to last forever. I feel like the ending of 30 Rock could very nicely converge with Lorne Michaels wanting to pick a successor. You know,
they could totally have some inter-show, postmodern intertextuality fun about her getting a job somewhere else.
Yeah, and I feel like if Lorne Michaels had to pick somebody today to run the show, I think Tina Fey would be very high on that list. So, I mean, you know, I don't know how confident I am in that actually happening, but it's the most likely scenario I can come up with, in that I really don't think Tina Fey's got a lot of success outside of 30 Rock coming her way as far as a performer. But that being said, I love Tina Fey. But yeah, that's sort of my guess for what happens, and I've sort of been thinking about this for a couple of years. But
it'd be cool if they could hit 50 years. I mean, I know that's an absurd landmark, but 37 is pretty nuts already.
Yeah, yeah. They're not that far away, all things considered.
If we get him until he's 72, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's got a good chance. And that's the thing. And the other thing about Tina Fey is that she's got so much clout now that, you know, she can sort of pull.
Oh, yeah.
She can boss people around and stuff like that. Well, and
Lorne Michaels is pretty spry still.
Yeah, surprisingly.
He'll be around for a while.
Yeah. No, I just, it's just the most likely thing I can come up with for the future of the show.
Yeah.
Because that show's not going to end when Lorne Michaels is still alive.
That makes a lot of sense, though. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to our podcast about Saturday Night Live.
I'm guessing podcasts.
Yeah, more than likely. Yeah, and watch the show or don't, and occasionally watch the digital short that people are talking about. So thanks for listening. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.